Welcome to the G328 podcast from City Gospel Mission. We are a podcast for those who are working as reconcilers in ministries, churches, and communities. G328 comes from the Bible verse found in Galatians 3:28, which says, "There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." This podcast is one of the ways we can help each other follow Jesus' teachings and turn away from bias, prejudice, racism, classism, and sexism. Hi, I'm the host, Kara Warden, with our guest today, Dalian. Dalian, could you share a little bit with us about who you are and what your background is?
I have been working at City Gospel Mission for over 11 years. I originally was a tutor with WizKids at a church when we were starting up on the north side of Cincinnati. And after about a year, they were looking to expand and they needed some additional staff, and I came on board. And I've been working with WizKids this whole time, but in the last couple of years, I've also picked up other youth programs like Princesses Ballet, and I'm starting to work with Hispanic Outreach as well right now.
And what's your official title?
I am an area director.
And what do area directors do?
We work with the sites. We help sites get started. We do training, not only for the site leaders, but for the volunteers. We look at the curriculum that we have and all the different ways and resources that we can offer to these sites. We work with the anchor churches, and our job is just to make their job easier because they are all volunteers and they have an amazing passion for what they do, and we just want to help them.
And you guys are all across the greater Cincinnati area and even into northern Kentucky with the churches that you're partnered with, right?
Yes. Yeah. We have around 40 sites, or at least we had around 40 sites last year, WizKid sites, and just over 20 Princesses sites.
Wow.
And we have probably around, 500 participants, and we have a little bit more than that, maybe close to 600 volunteers, because with WizKids, you not only have tutors, but you have curriculum, and so you have a whole leadership team, so you have more than one per student.
And that's just for WizKids. That's not counting Princess Ballet, which has grown tremendously over the last few years.
That's correct. Yep.
So our first season is on diversity, inclusion, and equity within the workplace. And you and I have talked off and on over the years because you've been on your own journey within CGM as it relates to these things. So could you share a little bit just generally about how you see diversity, inclusion, equity? What does it mean to you personally?
Yeah, it has been a journey. It's probably been, I can really tell you, almost exactly 4 years since I started this process that I'm on right now. And I grew up in a fairly liberal family and had some really interesting experiences growing up with, for example, I was at school, at a primarily Black school when I was in grade school, and started a church that was a interracial church in South Florida. I didn't start it, but my parents and other adults started it. And so I guess I always thought as I grew up that I understood where we stood as a country in terms of racial equality, and thought that we were in a pretty good place. Let's just put it that way. I really felt like things were going well, and that personally, I wasn't a racist, that I was open to being friends with anybody of different races and nationalities. But I came to realize that that wasn't exactly true. And it all started with a conversation that I had with Precious Jones when she was still here at the City Gospel Mission the day after the last presidential election. And we'd come into a meeting, an area director meeting, and she was very distressed, quiet, but distressed. And I didn't know what was going on. And I was kind of taking it personally because I was sitting next to her. And it ended up, we had this conversation, the whole group, at the end of the meeting about the election, because we'd had the whole meeting. We hadn't talked about this at all. It was like the elephant in the room, and started to understand how concerned she was just about what this meant for Black people. And after that meeting, I actually had another hour talk with John Albritton, and he was just very gracious to just kind of share with me some things to think about in terms of, you know, where we are and what kinds of challenges there still are with regards to racial equality. So that was kind of how it started. And it was more than anything, just a prick, you know, kind of, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I think I'm good. And shortly thereafter, we started the pilot for Undivided. And I was interested in being a part of that, not having any idea what would happen to me personally as I went through this, because I learned a lot of facts that I had not understood in terms of, you know, what has happened over the years with not only, you know, Jim Crow laws, but the prison system and just all the different ways that have made it difficult for African Americans to really place a stake and then build on that in this country. And it really came to a head when I took an implicit bias test and I found out that I was biased. And I'll tell you, at first I thought, no, this is wrong. that's not me. That's just not me. And I had to really sit in it for a little bit to realize that it was true. I had implicit bias that I did not realize was affecting me.
Undivided is a 6-week course that looks at race as it relates to the Cincinnati area. A lot of the data that you're talking about was focused on that area and how people of different races are impacted differently. So that's something that came from a local church that we piloted and is now mandatory for all full-time staff. And then when we talk about implicit bias tests, it is actually measuring the bias that's subconscious. That's the biases that we have that we're unaware of. So I just wanted to call that out. As you're talking, you're sharing some great stuff, but some people might not know what we mean when we're saying those things. So,
no, that's helpful. And it's because it's subconscious, it's something I didn't really understand that I was doing. But then when I see it there and I had a chance to think about it, I'm like, okay, all right, I have some work to be done.
Yeah.
There's some work that I need to do in this regard. And the other thing that I began to realize that it's not just within me, but there was the systemic racism that exists that just is there for everybody. One of the things that John had suggested early on, and I'm sure it was suggested in Undivided as well. Undivided, one of the things that it works on, that it tries to develop, is relationships. So you're in small groups and trying to build on relationship, and even outside of the actual classes, just meeting up with people. So, I mean, I already had friends that were African American, but I started meeting with them and asking them if they would tell me a little bit about their story.
Yeah.
And I think it was when I started to hear their stories and how similar they are in terms of having to deal with things that I would never have imagined that they would have had to deal with, that it just became clear to me that we weren't where I thought we were, and that I could learn from this, and that I could also perhaps be an instrument in helping to make it different.
One of the things that happens as you build relationships, you come to love people, And then when you hear that they're experiencing pain or harm or suffering because of things like racism, for me, that breaks my heart, and that brings it into a whole new level of being proximate. That's one of the things that Undivided talks about a lot, is being proximate. So,
Right. And the other thing that I liked about Undivided is it was looking at what we could do as the body of Christ. And at the same time, in my own personal growth as a believer, I was just getting back to the basics of loving God and loving people. And, you know, it's so simple, and yet it is what we're all about. And this seemed to be just pointing me in that direction and just saying, yes, this is what we have to do.
Let's look at each one at a time and kind of talk through that. So what's your journey been with diversity, for example?
My early childhood, you know, there was a lot of diversity that I've already mentioned. We ended up moving to the Midwest, and again, there was quite a bit of diversity in the schools that I was a part of. But when I went off to college, it wasn't as much, you know, from junior high to high school to college. It all just kind of was much less diverse. And really, frankly, more of what I thought about in terms of different people and how they're dealing with being on equal footing was more about women than it was about races or anything, because I was going into the workforce and it was still fairly early for women to be in business and get positions of business straight out of school, as looking at that as a career. So from there, I just lived my life, you know, and ended up, I married a man who is from another country. So again, that was diversity, but he's from the United Kingdom. So that's, you know, a lot more like than it is different. But there was, you know, the whole issue of different cultures, you know, that you had to deal with, but nothing that was an issue, nothing that provided him any kind of disadvantages. In fact, it was probably just the opposite. So
you had a lot of diversity, but maybe the inequity you saw related more to gender, perhaps, than it did to any other aspect, because you're a woman going into the workforce when women, well, we still do, but we're experiencing a great amount of discrimination and resistance.
Right. It was almost a little bit of, it was like the beginning of the breakthrough for women, because I worked at Procter & Gamble, and it was the first group of new hires in finance and accounting that there was like a third or more that were women. I mean, it usually had been one or two, you know, in each class. And so we were kind of that beginning of that wave. And so it really felt more like opportunity, fixing something that had been there. Like, we were given the opportunity as opposed to having to hit walls, at least from the beginning. As we started moving up, there was that. But so, yeah. So it really wasn't until, you know, got married and living in areas that were really predominantly white. And it wasn't until I started working at City Gospel Mission and then having the diversity of sites that I have, that I started really having interactions again with a much broader, diverse group of people.
I'd like to shift into equity from that. We know that Cincinnati inequity is tied pretty substantially to race. So if you are Black in Cincinnati versus white in Cincinnati, the chance of death in childbirth goes up at least 2 to 3 times. There's a lot of different things that are stacked against people based on their race within this area. And you're serving populations and starting to see this inequity based on where you're doing your work. So is part of that this work within CGM and across your sites and seeing that, is that part of what showed you that this inequity due to race existed?
Yes. Early on, I went to training called Understanding Poverty. At that point in time, it was still being led by Sherman Bradley, who I think was the first person at City Gospel Mission to share the work of the author, whose name I can't remember right now. But, and he said something that day that also had made a really big impact on me, and something that I didn't really believe at first. And he was talking about, you know, because when we talk about poverty and you look at poverty in Cincinnati, it is primarily Black. And there's a lot of poverty, but there's a lot of African-Americans who are in poverty. And he was talking about the effect of slavery. And I really was like, that was so long ago. How can that really still be affecting Black people today? And that was something that it took a while for me to really kind of wrestle with in my mind and really understand. And something recently in a training that I've had called groundwater training, it's the whole, if you look at the whole timeline of, you know, what has happened in the course of our country, slavery was hundreds of years of basis of when people were building into their lives, and slaves didn't have any part of it. They couldn't have property. They couldn't, you know, there was nothing to do. And how it, again, is how it just got that much worse.
There was a report in 2014, the State of Black America report, and some of the studies that came out of it talked about how of the 14,000 families living in poverty in the city of Cincinnati from 2005 to 2009, 76% of them were African American. And the median Black household income is $24,272 compared to $57,481 for white. Life expectancy can be up to 10 years less for African American than white men in Cincinnati. And so I think it leads into what you're talking about of this didn't just happen. This is the result, right, of something that started 400 years ago.
Right, right. And I learned things in Undivided, like even this whole idea of how people were able to get property, buy into houses, you know, after World War II, and how so many more percentage of white veterans were able to get into it than Black veterans, and how realtors would work on who would get into certain neighborhoods, and how they would just actually, I mean, plan it to just carpet it with white residents, white homeowners. You know, even the whole thing about building the interstates and primarily building the interstates through thriving Black communities. And it really helped me to see kind of how we got from, you know, the civil rights era, which was really an important era, an era where, you know, I grew up in, and there were opportunities being given, and yet it still wasn't equal.
Yeah, we see those outcomes even today. I think that same study I referenced before, 74% of children under the age of 6 who are African American are in poverty in Cincinnati. And that's a result of so many things that you're talking about, where many white people in America had the opportunity at least to build wealth, to buy homes that was not available to Black families and Black communities.
Right. And that's had such a huge effect on individual families and on communities. And the thing that I've started to realize is that has obviously had an effect on those families and on those communities, but it's had an effect on us as a country too, because we have not had the advantage of people who have gifts and talents that weren't able to bring them to fruition. And that's a huge thing to think about. I mean, it doesn't just refer to African Americans, but it can refer to women, it can refer to Hispanics, any population that isn't being given the same opportunities. They're not able to contribute to society the way that they were meant to, I think. And you know, God gives us all gifts and talents for a reason, and we want them all to be able to benefit our communities and our country and our world.
Which leads us to the third part, inclusion. So that's what we're talking about in a way is there is a lack of equity. And in many ways, what that results in or is a result of exclusion rather than inclusion. So what's some of your experience or what's some things that you'd like to share with us about inclusion?
I think this fits for the question that you're asking, but one thing that has been just remarkable in my journey has been that as a result of the groups that I have had in Undivided, because I did the pilot, but then I also had the opportunity to be a facilitator the next time around. And that group that we had when I was the first time I was a facilitator was an amazing group that we have amazing people at City Gospel Mission, and all a mixed group and all with such a passion for this work, and to be able to get to know them on a personal level rather than just knowing, you know, they work at homeless services or whatever has been amazing. So that inclusion in that group is so vibrant that they still get together even now. I mean, it's almost like we're family. It really is. No, we don't see each other every day. We don't necessarily right now with the pandemic, we don't even see each other personally. It's all over Zoom. But whenever we get together and pray together for our work and for this work of racial equality, it's just amazing. And we get to see the ways that God is working in each of us and what he is calling us to do. So I don't know if this is answering your question that you were thinking of when you asked me it about inclusion, but for me, it has been so powerful, and it's just so cool.
Well, the general definition of inclusion is that it's the behaviors or social norms that ensure people feel welcome. And that's what you're talking about in a small group. You guys did a 6-week journey together, but then you decided to do, this has been at least a year, right? Of meeting.
Almost 2 years
of you guys saying, we're going to pursue one another. We're going to stay in relationship and create habits that keep us together. And I think that is very inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. Gordon Havens is part of our group too. And he was one that got us really focused in the last year on intercessory prayer. You know, we've read books together. We've, you know, gone to different places together to just try to, as a group, learn more about, you know, what this is all about. So we went to the Underground Railroad Museum together. And to do that as a group was so much more powerful than when I had gone there before on my own with my family or with friends.
So is there anything else that you would want to share with us before we wrap up this podcast?
Yeah, I do actually, because, you know, with everything that has happened recently with George Floyd and all the myriad of injustices and deaths of, you know, Black people that we have seen during the virus or during the time of the coronavirus, this has become a big issue nationally. And it was like, okay, now what? It felt like I had been prepared for something with regards to this, and I didn't know what it might be. And obviously that was a big national conversation. You know, companies were saying they were going to do different things, or, you know, there was the people going out in the community and the lament, you know, at City Gospel Mission. And actually it has been helpful, but it also was a bit of a wall for me, because as a white person in a society where that is the majority and I have privilege as a part of that, I wasn't really sure what I could do and what I couldn't do. if for example, I know that for systems to change, it has to come from the people who have the power. And in that case, this is white people. But on the other hand, I don't want to step on, you know, African American toes if there's something that they need to do instead of I need to do. And so it was like, okay, how does this work for me? And so it's been a bit of a questioning time of, you know, what do I do next? And where I came out on, Undivided has been a big part of my journey. And they're getting ready to start another opportunity in the fall throughout the country, not just here in Cincinnati. And they're redoing it and it's going to be virtual, you know, so they had to do some things different. But I have offered to be a facilitator at a church up in my area. The other thing that I did was I had an opportunity, some of the videos that were being passed around at work, you know, people were saying, take a look at this. Maybe this is something that can help you. And I was so taken by one that I shared it at my adult connections class at my church. It took a couple hours to do it. And what I realized in that is that my journey has taken me a couple years, and there are people are where I was 2 years ago. And I'm called to love them just as I am called to love my Black brothers and sisters. And so I've seen that everybody has to make that journey. And I can't expect everybody to be where I am, or even me to be where somebody else is, you know, and feel like somehow not fulfilling, you know, my purpose. It really just brought it back to the whole loving God and loving others, you know, that I have to lovingly share things and hopefully bring opportunities for people to see some of the things that I had not ever realized before, and to make their own choices about is there systemic racism or not? Because, you know, that's sometimes, you know, people thinking, no, there is no such racism. I'm not a racist, so there is not racism.
A lot of what you're talking about is a walk that many white people, I feel like, are on right now as they've grown aware over the last few months or years of what the circumstances are really like for our Black and brown brothers and sisters. And what you said reminded me of a verse that I share at the end of this podcast, which is Micah 6:8. And mm-hmm. So it's this tension of how do we not be complacent, or how do we not ignore the suffering of others while still learning to walk humbly with people who are where we once were as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess the last point that I'd like to kind of make with how this is all affected me as I've seen others is that I've seen fear on both sides, but I've seen fear on the side of our majority. And you know, we're not called to live in fear. Jesus has not called us to live in fear. He's called us to live in freedom. And so I think in all of this, you know, where we've talked before about everybody being able to fulfill their potential will help everyone. This is another piece of it where we can all live together in freedom.
How has City Gospel Mission played into this journey for you?
Well, I think City Gospel Mission has really laid this journey out for me. And in a way, we as an organization have been going through it together. But what has just, I am so thankful for the opportunity to be able to do that. I had no idea that starting off as a tutor that I could end up being a part of some of what is going on here, and to be a part of an organization that's helping others, helping the least of these. And yet it's not just, you know, individuals. We as City Gospel Mission as a whole, I mean, Roger as a leader, I think, has led us and has gone through this himself. And it's just remarkable. I just thank him. And I thank, you know, I thank everybody that's a part of this, John Albritton, Precious, the other people that I've mentioned that have held my hand through this journey.
Like you said, it's a journey we're really all getting to do together. Not many of us would think from 4 years ago to now that we would be where we are doing the things that we're doing, I think. But that's God leading us and us listening and following where he's taking us.
Absolutely. Yep. And the first prayer day that I ever went to as a employee had such a huge impact on me that a company would spend time asking, inviting everybody to come together to pray for concerns, both corporately and individually, you know, once a month, just floored me. And even as a Christian, it was just so cool. And I think it's through that spirit of our organization of being led by God that this has allowed us to be where we are in this particular journey right now.
I love that. Well, thank you, Dalianne, for coming on. Hopefully we'll get to have you back again sometime.
Thanks, Kara. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you subscribe to the podcast to get the latest releases. And remember Micah 6:8, act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. We'll meet you back here next time.